Thank you. Thank you, Chen, for giving me this opportunity to travel Canada and spread the gospel of truth after this terrible campaign of disinformation about Haiti. Speaking to you this evening, after having spoken in a number of places, I was worrying about boring you with the same talk, but even more so worried about boring myself for speaking the same thing all over. But fortunately, there are so many things to be said about Haiti. There's been so many lies, so many half-truths, that millions of things could be said about Haiti. So if you allow me, I'm going to try and debunk a number of myths that have been spread about Haiti, both in the past and as we stand now. And I hope, if this is not what you expected, that in the question period you will challenge me and help me to answer your question. So I started with 10 myths on Haiti. 10 was a nice number, but as I went along, I got to 13. 13 being an ominous number, but you know, the election also were supposed to be for bad luck. The Haitian people turned it around, so we're going to turn that 13 myth around also. So let's start with what you've probably heard or read, Haitians being these violent human beings, you know, prone to violence. Probably it's in their blood, in their African origin. And yet, people who've been to Haiti know that Haitians are exactly the opposite of violent. They are very forthcoming. They welcome everybody who come and show respect. And they are so non-violent that in a country that has been the subject of so much interference by foreign powers, starting from the very birth of Haiti, birth out of violence meted to the African that were forced to come to Haiti after the Indians or the Arawaks living in Haiti had been exterminated, yet the violence, the defensive violence of Haitians has been really mild. Haiti is a country where 5% of the population control 60% of the wealth, and where the top 1% controls 50% of the wealth. Yet, have you ever heard of any pogrom or massacre in Haiti, except for the massacres that have been carried out by the very elite or by foreign powers? So much for the violence of the Haitian people. But if Haitians themselves are not violent, their history has been a violent one. This has been repeated so many times that now, you know, even I would tend to believe this incredible misrepresentation of Haitian history. First of all, Haiti does not have a 21st century history. Haiti really started from zilch 200 years ago. And I mean from zilch. It was not created by a European people migrating, conquering another country and setting their civilization, their institution there. No, it was created by Africans finding themselves in a foreign land, which was nothing else but a concentration camp, and forced to liberate that concentration camp and start treating that concentration camp as their own country. That's what Haitians had to do. Their culture had been totally unraveled by the slave trade and by the systematic breaking up of the groups that came from Africa. They made sure that they were spread all over the island so that they could not come together and gather around a common background, a common culture. So really, Haiti is in the beginning of its third century. And how many of European countries in their first 200 years did not experience, you know, turmoil and, you know, looking for a system, a way to build a nation or a country? So we've been going at it only for 200 years. And as for the violence, I beg of you to start your clock in 1804 and compare the level of violence in the history of beacon of civilization like Britain, France, Germany, and the United States. Start the clock and have a run for the champion of violence, and you will see that Haiti will not even qualify. Because look at Europe from 1800 to 1945. Look what the Europeans did at home in their own continent. Almost destroyed it in the fight between the German tribe and the French tribe and the British tribe. They literally destroyed this continent. And that is not counting with the violence they brought in every corners of the world, where they sent their children to kill and get killed. And this violence is also part of their history, whether or not it happened on their own continent. Look at the new kid on the block emerging in 1776 and called the United States of America. I don't have to tell you how violent their history has been. Their own civil war dwarfed all the little, you know, feud that Haitians had together. And then, you know, they sent their troops all over America that they call their own, be it Nicaragua, Honduras, Dominican Republic, Haiti, to the Philippines, to Vietnam. So who was the most violent country? Britain, for Christ's sake. You know, all over the world. Killing, maiming, looting. So Haitians don't even qualify in that race for violence. Forget about them, you know. Didn't even run. Now we come to another myth. Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. How did it get that way? Nobody even bothers to consider. Simply, they say, you know, this was the richest colony of France. And it was, but who did it make it rich? And how? This seems to be totally unimportant. But is Haiti poor? It depends how you define wealth and poverty. Of course, if you take the notion that you are what you own, then Haiti is poor. You are what you own. But if you put people as the greatest wealth that a nation can have, then Haiti is rich. I don't have to tell you about the resilience of the Haitian people, about their creativity, about their incredible belief in freedom, and now in democracy. Haiti is uncivilized. Probably you've read about neck lacing. I mean, you know, how more uncivilized could you be to actually take an old tire and burn one person? I agree with that. It is totally uncivilized. But the judgment could not come from people who have invented the flamethrower, then, unsatisfied with that degree of civilization, have gone to napalm. And then, still unsatisfied with this uncivilized way of killing, went to the atomic bomb. Frankly, if you consider that a progress, then, if you consider that civilization, then Haitians are truly uncivilized and backward. And take your civilization and run as far as you can from Haiti with it. Haiti has not invented the concept of preventive war. War to make peace. Kill people so that they can enjoy democracy and be happy. Haitians did not invent shock and war after inventing Agent Orange to defoliate a whole country. So we are not civilized, and we're happy not to be. In Haiti, we do not call doctors to find humane ways to kill people who don't want to die, and then arrest doctors who want to help people to die in a humane way when they do wish to die. We do not ban people from smoking when SUVs are smoking all over our streets. So we are not civilized and happy to be so. Now, there is another one. Haitians are not ready for democracy. They're not ready because half of them cannot read or write, and almost all of them are poor. So this disqualifies them for democracy. But before that one, there was an older one. But it's the same story. They were not ready for independence, you see? It was too early. You have to be taught freedom as if it wasn't a given right of all human beings. You have to be taught it. So we were not ready. The truth is, the master is never ready for freedom. And take this example of those who were forced to wait more than 100 years, 150 years, 160 years after Haiti to gain their formal independence. Congo got their independence in 1964. They had been so well prepared in those 160 years. They were so much more ready, having been taught by the master, that Haiti had to send hundreds of teachers, doctors, because there were none in Congo. None. After having waited to be prepared for freedom. Not only that, look at Congo today. They have waited, haven't they? They had been occupied or being taught democracy by the UN. Remember Patrice Lumumba, one of the great leaders of the African struggle for freedom, for creating a real democracy in Congo? He was handed over to the killers by the UN. So, weren't we ready for independence? We had been ready even before the concept of independence even was written down. The master is never ready for freedom, but the slave was always ready. Now, the new version is that we're not ready for democracy. You know, for all these people who don't know how to read and write, they're too poor to even come to terms with the concept of democracy. Yet, these are the very people that have gone five times to speak their will through the ballot. They are the very people who, by sheer number, could have gotten rid of that elite through the expression of what I call self-defense. Yet they went to the ballot box. The first time, they were massacred in what I call a preemptive coup d'etat. Then they went back and voted Aristide. There was another coup d'etat. They came back and voted for Préval. There was a strangling of the country. They went back and voted Aristide. And now, despite the new coup, despite the repression, they've gone back to the ballot and voted again for Préval, demonstrating not only that they know that power should come from the people and preferably through the ballot, but also that they want a continuity. They want a regime that will address the problem of Haiti, which are problems of bringing the majority into the fold, giving the majority the basic human rights, the right to education, the right to basic health care, the right to freedom of expression. So Haitians are more ready for democracy than most people on earth. They know its value. They know that it is not a land where you arrive and then relax. They know it is an ongoing process, something that most people have forgotten. And I'm sorry to say, most people in the so-called civilized world, most people in the G8 country have forgotten what democracy is truly about. The Haitians know about it. They're the one who actually assault polling station to vote. They're the one who face bullets to vote. They know the value of democracy. There's another one. And a couple of one, I'll lump them together. Aristide has been the worst dictator in Haiti's history. I mean, one would have to really stretch one's imagination to come up with this one. I happen to be 56 years old, and I've lived through Duvalier's dictatorship at a time when you couldn't speak even in your own home. To comment on Duvalier's health was already a crime punishable by death. And I've seen, under Aristide, the medias controlled by this oligarchy that I've described, saying against Aristide things that would get you taken to court, if not arrested, if you said them here or in France, you know. People going on the radio to accuse Aristide of all kind of imaginary crime and then going home to do it again the next day. I know what a dictatorship is about, and certainly there was none of that under Aristide. Maybe there should have been a little bit of that, but don't quote me on that one. Aristide was overthrown by a popular uprising and then resigned. His presidency had been a disappointment. So, you know, implicit in that, the operation by the joint forces of Canada, France, and the US was welcomed by the Haitian people and was the way to go. That's, you know, the modern world with the right to protect, some concept like that. Well, first of all, Aristide was not overthrown by a popular uprising. He was not even overthrown by the antics of the so-called democratic opposition or the civil society led by a member of that 1% controlling 50% of the wealth, the owner of a sweatshop. No, he wasn't even overthrown by these 200 mercenaries that came from the Dominican Republic with the help, the complicity of the Dominican army, which means immediately the complicity of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Intelligence Agency. No, Aristide was overthrown by a direct intervention by a triumvirate made of Canada, GTF2, special forces that you do not control in your democracy, and US Marines and French legionnaires. They had to step directly on the stage themselves to provoke this regime change. And on January 1st, this image you've never seen, those hundreds of thousands who came to the National Palace to celebrate Haiti's bicentennial, who were so numerous they broke down the gate of the palace and actually rushed into the yard, scaring a few people. But, you know, Of course, there was nothing to be scared about. You know, it was just a people celebrating. Also, you've seen no image of the demonstration on February 7, 2004, which marked the anniversary of Aristide's first swearing into power, when 500,000 people took to the street of Port-au-Prince with only one slogan: 5 years, respect the mandate, the constitutional mandate of the president. All that was brushed away. What's 500,000 poor people? They don't count for nothing. And if Aristide was so unpopular, how come when, after he had been taken away as far as the Central African Republic, when Jamaica invited him for a 5-week stay in Jamaica, the US, Canada, France, and of course the Haitian elite went ballistic, you know? He was too close for comfort. He was going to capsize the whole island. But how could he do that if he didn't have a strong following in the country? So there goes the myth of Aristide having been overthrown by a popular uprising. There's another one gone for you. Did Aristide disappoint the Haitian people? Of course he did. What government does not? And especially a government that was first armstrong by a coup d'etat, which lasted 3 years, and then economically strangled, and then submitted to such a thorough disinformation campaign. What government would not disappoint its people? But if this is a criteria for sending in the troops, then Berlusconi in Italy should be in exile in Siberia. George Bush, who sent American kids to kill and be killed based on a huge lie, should be somewhere in Tajikistan, having been removed under the right to protect by Canadian, Chinese, and maybe some other joint force. But that's not what we have seen. So is this right to protect and the interdiction to disapprove be applied only to countries like Haiti? So do we smell of some kind of racism? Or I don't know. But it seems to me that somebody who has an approval rate of 36% should have been removed from office. But it's different. During its 13 years in power, Lavalas did not achieve anything and was a disappointment. There is another urban legend for you. First of all, these 13 years in power. I mean, it's like Aristide was elected in 91 and had that long stretch in power and didn't do diddly with it. The man was in power for 7 months. Spent 3 years in exile, during which time all the grassroots organization were decapitated by killing the grassroots leaders, forcing them into exile, or luring them with visas. When the country's economy, which was nothing to boast about, was completely destroyed. But yet, he should have brought the country forward while he was in exile, while a military junta was repressing the people. So all these years are to be put to his debit. Now, Lavalas is continued by Mr. Préval. From the very beginning, he faces a parliament that is blatantly hostile, and he faces an embargo not only on aid, but on the loans that Haiti has contracted for, is paying interest on, but the money is not forthcoming. But that is also part of disappointment by Lavalas. Of course, Mr. Aristide's second term, under the very same embargo, under a military comment relé by ça encore? Les appel soukéou. Destabilization under a systematic campaign of disinformation, he should have delivered on all his promises, you know. It's the same as saying that you're gonna have people running a 100-yard dash, you tie a huge, you know, 25 kilo weight to the leg of one of the runner, and then scream a bloody murder that he finishes last and only runs the 100 meter dash in 14 seconds when everybody else is doing it in 10, you know? All these circumstances have been swept under the rug. And yet, despite all these obstacles, the Lavalas government have achieved plenty. They've achieved plenty in the signals that were sent to the people of another Haiti. A Haiti where the peasant would be considered as citizen, as people. A Haiti where the constitution mandate that all Haitian children be able to attend school was at least attempted. Do you know that in the 5 years that Lavalas actually held a modicum of power, more schools were built in Haiti, more public school, than in all the 190 years preceding Lavalas? Does anybody know about that? No, of course not. Of course not. So, another myth. Préval could not carry out his program because he was hamstrung by Aristide. Aristide, you know, kind of was looming over his presidency. Ask Mr. Préval himself. He was hamstrung by the opposition-controlled parliament, never by Aristide. The parliament stood in his way. Everything he would try, the parliament that was already in cahoot with the like of Jesse Helms, the like of Gilman in the state, that's what sabotage Préval's first presidency. And yet, he did enough for him to be remembered so many years down the line by the Haitian people who went out and voted him massively again. So this speaks quite a bit about, you know, the failure of the first Préval presidency. So, let's work on another one. And this one is probably the most insidious. Aristide was no Mandela. I mean, we in the third world are only entitled to a leader of our own if he meets the Mandela criteria. But first of all, you cannot be a Mandela without a de Klerk coming to terms with a reality and finally accepting a dialogue. Aristide could find no de Klerk. Aristide has also been described as intransigent. There's another word, sectarian. I've been an associate of Aristide for 20 years, and one of my problems with him is that he was not enough intransigent and not enough sectarian. The very first time the man became a candidate for the presidency, he was only a candidate. He was the only candidate to go to the army and tell them. And I was there. It's no one telling me about it, you know. I was there. We were threatened as we went to the headquarters of the army. And he told the high command, I have been denouncing the abuse of the army. So I'm the one that can bring about a reconciliation between the army and the people of Haiti. He then went to the Chamber of Commerce and told this tiny minority who were trying in that meeting to have fun with him, to humiliate him. He told them, I didn't come here to beg for your vote. I came here to tell you that in my vision of Haiti, you have your place. Not only did he do that, but in his first government, he had as a minister of justice somebody who had come directly from the Duvalier regime. When he came back in 94 after his exile, he had in his government people from the elite, people from different political parties. The second time he became president in 2000, he had not only in his government Marc Bazin, who had been his adversary in the first election, who was prime minister under the military dictatorship who had overthrown Aristide. He had him twice in his government. He had a minister of commerce that came straight from Duvalier's ex-dictatorship. He had two ministers of justice who had been collaborators of the coup d'etat of 1991. So is that a man that is sectarian? Is that a man that is inflexible, who accepted every proposal that were put to him for a compromise with the opposition, including the very week he was overthrown? So forget about that. And also, saying Aristide was no Mandela is also a slight on Mandela, because one, you know, they made Mandela into an icon, but they've also tried to castrate him, because Mandela spent 26 years in jail precisely because he refused to renounce armed struggle to bring about the end of apartheid. And that has been swept aside, you know. Everybody wants to be reminded of Mandela as an old man coming out of jail and preaching for reconciliation. He had always been preaching for a non-racial South Africa, but he had also been preaching for the end of apartheid by any means necessary. I'll run to the next one quite fast. I have a reminder that I've been speaking too long. It's a tendency with me. All right. All right, the supporter of Lavalas are a bunch of gangsters, kidnappers, and drug dealers armed by Alstead. Lies, lies, lies. They're not kidnappers. Sometimes they resort to kidnapping. They're not gangsters. Sometimes they do things that gangsters do. But it wasn't their choice. It was the choice of those who pulled the coup d'etat, and after having massacred their parents during the first coup d'etat, were trying to go for their own lives. It is always on the part of the oppressed self-defensive violence. And also, there is a trait amongst even the most progressive of people to recognize history only when it is written in a book or when it happened 200 years or 500 years ago or 5,000 or 10,000 miles away. The same people who had been applauding the slave revolt, who'd been applauding the insurrection in Soweto, who'd been applauding, for example, the French resistance, they're the one calling the resistance in Haiti kidnappers, terrorists, gangsters, etc., simply because it's happening here and now. But they are the same people, standing up against oppression, standing up about a violence that is 1,000 times more violent than the one they have to resort to defend themselves, and of course, to be able to sustain themselves, you know? Could you imagine those kids in Cité Soleil going, begging for money so that they could buy ammunition and food to continue the struggle? Did they have a choice but to resort to breaking a law that is unlawful? So they are not gangsters. Gangsters do not pick up their dead. They do not pick up the weapons that the casualties have dropped. Gangsters don't do that. Resistant fighters do it. So these kids in Cité Soleil that have been described as chimères, as gangsters, they're the one who've kept the ideal of Haitian democracy alive. And they're the one we now have a responsibility to protect. I'll finish with two things. The intervention brought or sought to bring stability and respect for human rights in Haiti. I mean, I'm not going to even argue this one. The facts speak for themselves. Never have we had so many summary executions. So many arbitrary firing of people in a country where unemployment runs at 70%. Never had we had more than 1,000 people in jail, arbitrarily arrested and kept in jail. So this is what the intervention has brought us in terms of progress in the rule of law and human right respect. And this is the intervention that not crazy radical like me have condemned, but the Haitian people themselves went to the ballot and said, we don't agree with what was done, and we're picking somebody from the very movement that you've tried to destroy with your intervention. So the jury has come and has reached a verdict, and it's a strong condemnation of that so-called regime change. Finally, And that's the one that's probably been played the most and seems to make sense. Haiti as a narco state. I mean, give me a break. If the thing is coming from Colombia and is being called for in the US, it has to go through countries like Haiti. If we are a narco state, we are so because the demand is in the US, the supply is in South America. We are on the way, so this is simply, you know, the free market operating. That's what it is. That's what it is. And just today I was hearing that the drug comes into Haiti, then goes through the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and the US. So how come the Dominican Republic is not characterized as a narco state? How come the US themselves, who are the engine pulling the whole thing with the demand and that stupid war on drugs, how come they're not declared a narco state? They're the one using the damn thing. They're the one using it as a tool of foreign policy, as a tool of social control, as the tool to build a police state. They're the one, the narco state, they're the one living off it. We're just paying the price for a stupid policy that has been tried before with alcohol, and we know what that has brought. So it's being done with perversity. It's not that they don't know, they've tried it with alcohol. Now they're trying it, supposedly, with cocaine. Why don't they stop selling guns? You know, some people use cocaine to have fun, not to kill themselves. But guns, I don't remember that you could smoke a gun, you know. Yet these are being sold. But let's forget about gun. Tobacco. I'm a smoker, so I know what I speak about. You see, they're selling U.S. cigarettes in Haiti at about a sixth the price of the price they're selling it in the U.S. So, could a Haitian government declare Philip Morris to be a well-known killer and send a commando to snatch him out of the U.S.? Could he do that? When we know that in 1996, and I'm basing myself on Canadian statistics, 45,000 people died as a result of cigarette smoking, and only about 500 died of homicide, and drug doesn't even show on that graphic. It's too small. So it's time we have a joint task force to go arrest Mr. Bush and the barons of the tobacco industry in the US and of the gun industry also. Thank you very much.